Derek Chauvin was found guilty in the murder of George Floyd. Another jury will determine whether his three fellow Minneapolis police officers should have stopped him. One tried. A body cam shows Thomas Lane asking, should we roll him on his side before being shut down by Chauvin? But Lane was a rookie, on the job just 4 days. Chauvin had 19 years. Lane might have been thinking of other officers like Carriel Horn, a police officer in Buffalo, New York, which had a duty to intervene policy in 2006 when she tried to stop a fellow officer from putting a chokehold on a suspect, and that officer punched her in the face, and she was fired for interfering with his arrest. Well, things may be changing. Buffalo recently made the duty to intervene policy a law. Officers who don't intervene will be charged. And many cities across the country are now teaching officers how to intervene. Some, including New York City and New Orleans, using a program called ABLE, based on the research and often under the direction of Irvin Staub, professor emeritus of psychology at UMass Amherst, who's devoted much of his career to the psychology of intervening. Professor Staub, welcome.
Nice to be with you.
Talk about some of your early research. This was at Harvard. You had your assistants drop in the streets, right, and see if someone would come help them. And then children.
Yes. We had a child sit in a room, and they heard a crash and sounds of distress from another room while they're working on a drawing. The youngest children helped less. The first graders helped more. The second graders helped even more than that. And to our surprise and shock, in sixth grade, helping went down to about the level of first graders. And children were saying, I didn't think I was allowed to go into the other room. Already young children learn what are acceptable traditional behaviors. And they are not told that under certain circumstances, caring about others supersedes these other kinds of rules.
Sure, we're taught it's none of your business, don't get involved. It's so fascinating because you then found this in other studies and you can apply it towards not just police officers, but we're understanding a nurse helping a surgeon, a co-pilot who might be of less rank, afraid to say something to a pilot because, what, they don't feel they have the permission?
Yes. I initiated this training many years ago after the Rodney King incident, but then we used it extensively in New Orleans, and it was very effective there. Complaints about the police diminished. Unnecessary harmful actions greatly diminished. And then we moved on to create a third version of the training, which is now called ABLE, and we are training over 100 police departments right now.
Okay, you've said a couple things. I want to go back to 1991 after the Rodney King incident, the black man brutally beaten by 4 police officers while 17 other officers looked on. A tape of that event provoked the LA riots, and so the LA department wanted to make change, but you met resistance there. But in New Orleans, the program, which was called, I think, EPIC, at that point in New Orleans, it had turned it into a verb. Officers were saying, I epicked my partner, meaning I calmed him down. How did you get officers to address a superior to stop them from doing something that would get them into trouble and cause harm?
We talk about the culture. Normally, police officers learn to support a fellow officer no matter what that officer is doing. We turn it around so that good policing is stopping a fellow officer, both for the sake of citizens, but also for their sake, so that they don't lose their jobs and they are not going to be criminally prosecuted. So before any other officers, we train the leaders of a department so that they sign up for it. Like in the Chauvin case, one officer, as you mentioned, tried to intervene. Well, what we train them is to start such low-level intervention, but if that is not successful, to increase, to say, I'm going to take over, if necessary, also to physically engage, and also to turn to fellow officers who are on the scene and invite them in as allies. We also talk about what inhibits intervention. If there is no culture change, what happens is what happened to that female officer you mentioned, who was retaliated against and lost her job. We want to be sure that that doesn't happen.
How do you get a rookie confronted? We all know what it's like to be in a hierarchy, and when there's someone you just feel you can't question. And then how do you get the senior officer to accept somebody in public saying to him, you know what, take a break, you need a break? That's publicly humiliating for that senior officer in front of bystanders.
That's a perfect question. And part of our training is about accepting intervention. And they even talk about what is the kind of intervention that would be most acceptable to them. So, for example, the superintendent in New Orleans, Michael Harrison, he was wearing this little pin that we give everybody, and he was telling his officers, I am wearing it so that you know that if I do something inappropriate, you can intervene on me. Then also practice this. What do you say? And you do this actually with superior officers. That can change the whole climate in the department. Having a law that requires intervention is not enough.
It's not just about you have to do this. It's the why it's best for you and everyone to do this. And it's practicing doing this. You literally do it several times in a skit way. And also you can fake it. You teach police officers to maybe say to their partner, you know what, I actually need some training on this. Let me try. To save the superior's face and intervene.
Yes, yes. And one more thing, and that is this training has an effect even without intervention. A female officer was arresting somebody, and this person spit in her face, and that's one of the greatest insults to a police officer. Mm. And she didn't retaliate. And afterwards, she told other officers, I epicked myself. People learn not only to stop others, but also the ways that you can stop yourself.
Can you talk a little about your interest in intervention? We understand you were a child in Nazi-occupied Hungary, were with your family nanny, and she protected you.
Well, this wonderful woman, Maria, took me and my sister into hiding. And after a while, Maria thought that other people in the building were getting suspicious, so she took us somewhere else. She was my incredible role model.
You know, she, Professor, didn't have training. Are there just some people who, they will stand up to the Nazis? They will stand up to a bully? Is it just, is there something that you can't teach?
This is something that some people carry with them as a result of who they are, as a result of their own life experience. Now, in most genocides, most people remain either passive or support the perpetrators. But a very small percentage of people endanger themselves, they endanger their families, including their children.
And so we see how your lifelong study of rescuers, of intervention, started with Maria. You were so young. I just wondered, did you ever have a chance to ask her, why did you do that?
Well, she experienced harsh, bad, harmful behavior from a stepmother. And sometimes we learn from that. But when she was about 89 years old, and I said to her, you know, everything that I do in life has to do with you. And her head was shaking, her hair all white, and she said, to my amazement, I know. It got me too.
Well, what a gift. UMass Amherst Professor Emeritus, expert in the science of intervention, who's now working with police departments, Irvin Staub. Professor Staub, Irvin, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I deeply appreciate it.